Today is May 27th, 2015, and this is episode number 308 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a clown gone bad. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
I'm picturing the Brian-mobile as you drive around town in your clown costume with the evil look in your eyes. And the calliope music that comes out slowly shifts to a minor key. That's, yep, just like that.
Yeah, my high school band, our first name was The Paisley Ascot because we were all obsessed with the 60s. And but we changed it to When Clowns Go Bad, which was taken from a Far Side cartoon,
which actually is an awesome Far Side cartoon. I do remember that one.
It's got a like clowns hiding in this alleyway holding pies, and there's a guy walking down the sidewalk, and he's about to be surprised by the clowns gone bad. Always tickled me and my friends to death,
and rightly so. That's an excellent Far Side cartoon,
which by the way is something that Clowns Gone Bad could do, tickle you to death.
They could
nonetheless. You were off in NOLA last week.
I was at the Aces conference, and
that's a poker event, right?
Yeah, because everyone knows how much I play cards. Yeah, I think my one attempt at making a poker reference, which was a couple weeks ago, totally fell flat because not only did you not understand what I was trying to say, I couldn't even articulate it.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So, no, it was a conference for Apple consultants, and I had the honor of giving the keynote, which was an honor in that this was the very first presentation given at the very first ASUS conference.
Uh-huh.
So that was really cool.
That is cool. Solid work.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Got to follow that up by going to Comic-Con and interviewing sci-fi personalities there on stage.
Excellent.
So that was fun.
That's a ton of fun. That's good stuff. It was a busy week for you.
It was actually a very busy week, and I'm glad to be back so that I can be back at my normal pace of cranking out articles all day with you.
Fair enough. Speaking of Johnny Ive.
Yes, do tell.
He got a title while you were gone. Got a new title.
Just so you know, I really missed your segues all week long.
my bad segues. So Johnny Ive, whom we all know as Apple's king of design, just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Did you read the article? Where did you have time for that?
I did.
Not my article, the Stephen Fry piece.
I read part of the Stephen Fry piece. I read all of your article. That shows you where my priorities are, doesn't it?
Wait, well, it does, but part of my article said go read the Stephen Fry piece because it's awesome.
It is awesome. I just kind of ran out of time when I was reading.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Well, Stephen Fry did a piece for The Telegraph where he was based on being invited to Apple. He's got to hang with Stephen Fry is not a journalist per se. He's a comedian. He's has a bit of personality to go with that. And he made no bones about the fact that he got to go hang with Tim Cook and Johnny Ive and some other folks at Apple. And he wrote kind of a gushy little love story about it.
That's so sweet.
It is sweet. And one of the many little tidbits that came, so it's very funny. It's a very funny piece. It's really well written, but he actually got a couple of scoops given to him by Apple. And,
which is fascinating.
Fascinating as can be. And one of those scoops, probably the biggest one, is the fact that Johnny Ive is going to be Apple's first chief design officer.
I find it fascinating that they've never had anyone in charge of design before now.
Well, oh, they wait. Did. They did, because he was the senior VP of industrial design.
Right.
right? But he is now, he's just a plain chief, chief design officer. And two of his people are being promoted to the vice presidential level. So we've got Alan Dye, who's going to be the vice president of user interface design, and Richard Howarth, I'm assuming is how it's pronounced, will be the new vice president of industrial design. And all this is, I guess, officially taking place on July 31st.
July 1st.
I thought it was July 31st.
I'm pretty sure it's July 1st.
July 1st. Excellent.
See?
Oh, I can tell that you had to fix that for me in the story because it says July 1 instead of 1st.
We have our little tells in the way we write.
That we do. So July 1st, which would be obviously because Johnny is going to be an officer of the corporation, they're going to have it be effective at the beginning of the next fiscal quarter.
So July 1st makes sense.
Yes, that's why that's happening. Really, it's the responsibilities have probably officially started.
I'm betting they had started before Stephen Fry happened to stroll by and chat.
Yeah, it probably was. It's probably been in the works for a while. I mean, these two guys, Messrs. Howarth and Dye, have been working for Johnny for a long time, and there's probably been a lot of de facto that's what they're in charge of.
Sure, that would totally make sense. And now this just makes it official.
Yeah, right, exactly. It'll make it official, and a big part of this, at least according to the story that Stephen Fry wrote about it, a big part of this is to free Johnny Ive from some of the mundane managerial stuff. And
which seems like a smart move to me. His value is not in pushing paper. It's in coming up with incredible designs.
Right. How does he... So he has a team working for him, and he has had this team working for him for a long time. As a matter of fact, some of these people have been with Apple and with the Johnny Ive-led design team since the 90s, late 90s.
Which is amazing.
Which is amazing. But I don't understand how he has... I mean, so, you know, one of the tidbits that we got out of the story from Stephen Fry is that Johnny designed the furniture that's used at Cafe Mac, which is the employee cafe at Infinite Loop.
And the chairs are comfy.
The chairs are comfy, and the tables are nice, and... apparently, Johnny designed them, and he's designing the desks that are going to be used in the spaceship that's being built.
I hope he takes his design cues from the original Tron movie. I loved the big desk in Tron.
I got, fair enough. We'll have to wait and see. Kind of doubt it. Just saying.
That's...
Hashtag LOL.
Yeah, I know. Don't let me down, Johnny.
But, you know, so in addition to that, of course, we have a little thing called the Apple Watch, you know, some iPads here and there, some Macs, Mac Pros, Mac Minis,
MacBook Airs.
And Johnny doesn't design all this stuff by himself, but he's involved in all this stuff. You know.
Right.
So I don't know how he possibly has time to do that. Working on a car.
Right.
You know, I mean,
you know, he's elbow deep in that.
He's got to be. Although I do still think that Mark Newsom is probably taking lead on that project.
That wouldn't surprise me, but Johnny still has to be very heavily involved in the car.
Yeah. How do you have that much time in the day? That's just a lot of design work. I mean, come on, you're designing furniture. I mean, that takes time.
Yeah, it does.
But he's going to be Apple's first chief design officer. I was listening to some coverage on, was it NPR or was it Marketplace? I don't know. It's one of the lefty shows. and I kid because I actually think that in particular NPR is not lefty at all, but whatever.
I just assumed you meant the hand people used to write.
Fair enough. So I was listening to coverage of this story on public radio, one of the news programs that I listen to when I'm in my car, and because I'm old. And it was kind of interesting, some of the directions that they went. They called Johnny a billionaire, which I don't know that he is. He could be. Is Johnny a billionaire?
He could be.
Is Johnny Ive, because we're professional folks. Is Johnny Ive a billionaire? But they...
it's going to come back and say, no, he's an industrial designer.
Talking about the house he bought. Anyway, I don't know if he's a billionaire yet. He buys like a billionaire. That's a 2012 story. These are all stories about that house. Remember that house he bought in 2012?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, these are all, every single one of these responses is a story about that.
Yeah, so he spends like a billionaire. I spend like a 20-er.
Net worth of $130 million in 20. Yes, you know, I think they just got that wrong.
I'm thinking so. Unless they decided to redefine billion.
Let's see what the Wikipedia says. Worth net.
Well, okay, if we're talking dollars, but how about if we're talking quarters?
Well, how about if we're just talking about actual value? I mean,
that's a way to go too.
He's talking about priceless.
Yeah.
Designing the world's first wearable computing device that people will actually use.
Roughly, that's amazing. It's as if Johnny Ive just walked in the studio. That was uncanny.
$30 million designing the iPhone. $10 million being me. Priceless.
And I just walked right in the middle of your joke. I'm sorry
you
about
did.
That.
That's okay, though. That's okay. Anyway, one of the things that they mentioned is that CDO was an acronym. Like Chief Design Officer is an acronym that actually had, was a collateralized debt obligations. It was a bugaboo term from the financial crisis of 2008.
So,
that was interesting that they even went in that direction. But he's going to be Apple's first CDO. Boy, that was a rabbit hole. There's no light above me.
That's okay. I'll drop a light down. So, Johnny Ive,
here,
new job.
I've got this light that's really beautifully designed. Use it. New job, CDO, Apple's first CDO. And here's what I think is fascinating about that. I went looking for other chief design officers. Mm-hmm. And I found a piece from November of 2014 talking about the fact that I'm going to have to... Because it was...
We're professionals, people.
Yeah, professionals. We're always, always prepared. Johnson & Johnson's, Philips Electronics, and Pepsi.
Pepsi.
That just kills me. They all have chief design officers as of recently. And here's the fascinating thing about that. They have chief design officers because of Johnny Ive and Apple. Apple is the company that has made design paramount, that has made the importance of design a selling point for its products. And other companies are starting to cotton on to this slowly, despite the fact that Apple's been showing the way for many, 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 many years. And yet, here's three companies that have all beaten Apple to the punch with having a chief design officer.
That is absolutely fascinating.
I find that very interesting. I mean, he probably... I mean, Johnny would have been CDO worthy when Steve Jobs was still with us. Going back at least to the iPhone, if not the iPad, back to 2010... Johnny probably should have been called a chief D. There should have been an elevated position for him at that point.
Sure. Interesting that they didn't do it at that time.
Yeah, it is interesting. And but, you know, at the same time, Apple had a chief operating officer, Tim Cook. And when Tim Cook became CEO, there, Jeff Williams was mm-hmm. promoted to vice president level and then eventually senior vice president level, but he was never made a, Apple does not have a COO today.
You're right.
As a matter of fact, I don't think Apple has anyone in the C-suite besides Johnny Ive. I'm going to look again here. Again, we're professionals.
Well, while you look that up, I just have to ask, how long before Samsung announces that they have a CDO?
I bet you they put a CDO in place before July 1st, if they legally can.
So we decided we needed a CDO, and we realized this when we looked at a dish of water on the table.
There is no one else in the C-suite. It's Tim Cook at CEO, and it's Johnny Ive, who is still listed as Senior Vice President of Design. Phil Schiller is Senior Vice President. Jeff Williams, Senior Vice President. Bruce Sewell, you know, you're not going to have a Chief Legal Officer, I don't think.
Although yeah, Apple could have one.
That's really interesting. Here you have Apple. Apple runs leaner than every company a fraction of its size. Right? I mean, there's, gosh, on the leadership page now, I mean, there's like, what, 6 or 7 people on the board, which is really too lean. They should have 10 or 11 people. You've got, on the leadership page, you've got 10 people at the senior vice president level. And you've got another paltry 6 people listed at the vice president level. And I think they actually have an additional vice presidents, but they're, you know, lower down on the pecking order.
Sure.
Well, like the two new guys.
Right. Well, okay, Alan, so it's not official until July 1. That's when Apple's webpage will change. But yes, yeah, we have the two new vice presidents.
That's a good point. That's a good point. They wouldn't be there at all. As a matter of fact, maybe they will be there. But anyway, the point is, Apple has a relatively small let's look at Microsoft leadership. Let's do a quick comparison to Microsoft, a company with a fraction of Apple's revenues. Microsoft leadership news.
But more employees overall.
More than 100,000 more. Employees than Apple. Apple's official headcount is probably below 40,000. All right, so Microsoft senior leaders, they list 16 people. Well, and Apple's got 16 people. Oh, they have 16 executive vice presidents and senior vice presidents.
Mm.
That doesn't count, and a chief operating officer in Kevin Turner. So that doesn't count the legion of vice presidents.
And legion is probably the correct word.
Well, yeah, probably. So Apple runs really, really lean. And yet, despite running so lean, they only have 2 people in the C-suite. And only one of those people hasn't even gotten there yet. It's really interesting to me. I don't even know what it is I want to say about that. It's just, it's really interesting. You would think that Apple, a company where the executives are so singularly important, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Phil Schiller has been in charge of Apple's marketing. Now, admittedly, Steve Jobs was essentially also in charge of Apple's marketing. Right? You've got Johnny Ive, you know, singularly in charge of design. You've got Luca Maestri, and before him, of course, Peter Oppenheimer, and before him, what's his face?
Yes, the other one's his face.
the guy who trained Oppenheimer. Anyway, you've got, Apple's finance department. I mean, they manage more money than some countries, you know?
Yeah, that's very true.
Their finance department is extraordinarily important to what they do. You've got Eddie Q, who is incredibly important to all of Apple's media deals. Incredibly important. And yet none of these folks have been in the C-suite or are in the C-suite. And I'm not, I'm not saying that they're being shorted. I'm not saying that this is somehow a problem. I'm just saying it's really, really interesting.
No, it is really interesting. And I find it fascinating that as Apple has lost the people that were in the C-suite, I'm going to use that term now. I never used it until I heard you saying it, and I'm going to use it all the time in the C-suite because I'm cool like you.
Yeah, yeah, that's what the cool kids say.
That's what the cool kids say. I want to be cool just like you, Brian. So, anyhow, as they have lost the people that were in the C-suite, they never replaced them.
Well, there was only one person.
They had a CFO for a long time. Peter Oppenheimer was CFO.
Of course, gosh, you're totally right. You're totally right. And so was the guy he replaced.
Yes.
They were both CFOs. And Luca is not CFO yet. You're right. So there was a COO, there was a CFO, and there was a CEO.
Oh, you know what? I'm wrong. Luca is a CFO. I just checked. I was wrong. He's Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer.
Yeah. All right. Boy, we're professionals. Who runs our show?
I think the interns.
You're supposed to say top men.
Oh, that's right. Top men.
What See, top men?
Top men.
Or who? Who is what I'm supposed to say? Boy, we're just messing.
Man.
Let's just delete all this. Our readers don't need to know what idiots we are.
It's too late for
listeners,
that, Brian.
Our listeners don't
need to know. I rest my case. You know, I have an excuse today. What about you?
None.
Maybe I'm contagious. Yeah. In that sense.
Maybe. So I'm looking at Google's, by the way, Google's leadership page. They've got, so you've got Larry and Eric and Sergey. You've got David Drummond and Patrick Pitcher. These are the top five people. And then below that, you've got 15 additional people listed at the senior vice president level. Apple runs lean. I got that right. Let's focus on the part we didn't get wrong.
Okay. Apple runs lean. And Johnny Ive gets to join Tim in the C-suite on July 1st.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, I still haven't figured out why some people took this promotion as meaning that he was about to leave. It's really weird to me.
You know, that wasn't something that even occurred to me until I saw people freaking out saying, oh my God, this is the first step for Johnny leaving. This is his exit strategy. I'm like, I'm just not seeing that.
You don't promote someone to the C-suite, because we're just going to keep saying that.
Right.
So that you can ease them out, or so that they can ease out. Corporate world does not work that way. Not even at Apple, where all the rules are different. You don't make someone an officer
just so they can leave.
So that they can leave.
Yeah, I agree. So I am not buying the hypotheses that people are suggesting that this is an exit strategy.
Right.
I don't think it is.
I would imagine at this point, even if Johnny still wants to leave, right? Because we had the story in 2012 when he bought the house. One of the things that came out of that was, so he bought this $17 million home in San Francisco. It's often called Billionaire's Row. I found that out from my Google search when I was trying to find out his net worth.
When you were hanging out in the C-suite.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And at that point, there were basically leaks that Johnny really wanted to go back home to England. He missed England, and he was really thinking about going home, and Apple gave him, you know, a bunch of money, some more responsibilities and whatnot, and he ended up staying. Mm-hmm. At this point, I think that he has probably decided to see through the spaceship. After all, he's designing the furniture for it.
Right.
And probably at least the car.
Sure.
you know, he's the one who brought his buddy Mark Newsom onto the team. He's not going to bring his buddy Mark Newsom. Mark Newsom isn't going to come to the team knowing that Johnny's leaving.
Well, it depends on how many zeros they put at the end of his check. But yes, I agree. Mark, he's there because Johnny is there.
Mark is a wealthy man.
Yeah, he doesn't need the gig.
He probably doesn't need the gig at all. I mean, he's got his own watch company. He's got his own furniture label. He's in charge. He's in charge of the VIP program for Qantas Airlines. I mean,
he has a couple gigs.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he doesn't need the gig. He came to Apple because he wanted the project and because he's Johnny Ive's buddy. I mean, I don't know either of them personally, but that's my gut feeling, and I'm pretty confident on that. So anyway, I don't think that would happen if he knew that Johnny was going to leave.
I agree.
And I don't think Johnny would have brought him if Johnny knew he was going to leave. No, Johnny's here. Johnny's here to see it. If Johnny's not here for the rest of his career, he is here to at least see some particular projects through. And the spaceship campus is one of the most obvious ones. And I think probably the car.
I agree. And it just occurred to me why some people might be thinking that that this is an exit strategy. Okay. And it's one of the lines from Stephen Fry's piece where he says, Johnny wants to travel more.
And yeah, but it's in context of traveling for the company. It's specifically in context with traveling for the company and visiting more Apple stores.
Yes, but that doesn't mean people don't take stuff out of context all the time.
Well,
it's
true.
You take that line by itself, meaning out of context, and I can see where people would look at that and think, oh, that's code for he wants to have more time off, he wants to go and relax, and he's going to travel.
Yeah, and I hope he does get to take more vacation time. All these guys work too hard. And ladies.
Yeah, they do.
When I say guys here, I'm definitely including the women, which is all the folks who work at Apple work too hard.
They do. But we get some really cool stuff because of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yay! Thank you.
Yeah. Yay. I do appreciate it, Apple. You rock.
Now, I'm on Twitter, sort of.
Really? Do tell.
TM O'Brien with a Y.
I didn't realize TMO started with a Y, but okay. You are on Twitter. I see you there.
Yeah, I am.
You post the tweets.
I do the Twitter tweets sometimes. And TM O'Brien, I would love it if our listeners were to come and follow me. I'm hedging here because I haven't been tweeting a lot. I've been super busy.
Sometimes that happens.
But you tweet a lot.
Yeah, yeah, I guess I do.
What are you? You're TMO Jeff?
No, I'm Jay Gamut.
Oh, Jay Gamut, right. Is that with a Y or an I?
It's the I, but don't forget the umlaut.
Oh, okay. All right, I will do that. Yeah. So anyway, y'all follow us. If you stuck with us this far, for some reason you want to hear what we have to say. That's all I'm saying.
So you can hear more of this.
Or read more of it.
Sure.
Like I said, you're with us at this point. You're in for the long haul. So follow us on Twitter too,
and we salute you for your would it be dedication, persistence, stubbornness? I don't know. Whatever it is,
illness.
Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, tomato, tomato.
Yeah, whatever.
You know what I want to do? I'm probably going to do it too. $10 for an official Star Trek email address. Starfleet.com.
Are you going to do TM O'Brien at Starfleet.com?
Nope. I'm not going to say what I'm going to do. I don't want someone to nab it before I pay for it. You got to pay $10 a year. Small price to pay. $10 a year. And this, by the way, they're not sponsoring us or anything. I just think this is cool. Starfleet.com. I don't know who owns it. I don't know if this is part of the Roddenberry family. It's saying CBS Studios at the bottom, deciding its contents, copyright, and trademark. by
CBS Studios. Okay, so it's an official thing.
Well, unless they're lying.
Unless they're lying. Okay, there is that. Wait, are you implying that it's possible that something on the internet could not be true?
Yeah, I am in fact implying that. Nonetheless, I want a Starfleet.com email address. What handle should I get?
That's a really good question. Okay. There's so many options. You know, if you go out and you get yourself a Kentucky Colonel suit, then you have to be Colonel Brian or Colonel Sanders at Starfleet.com.
Unfortunately, I could pull that off. I've got the hair and the goat. Colonel Josh is my fake.
Is that your Kentucky Colonel name?
Yes. Anyway, Starfleet.com. I find that I want a Starfleet.com email address. I don't need it. I've got more email addresses than I can manage as it is.
And you're about to have one more.
I know, because it's Starfleet.com. Isn't it cool?
It is really cool. And now you have me thinking, what would I get for a Starfleet.com address?
Captain Jeff. No.
Captain Jeff.
Captain Jeff.
C-A-P apostrophe N Jeff.
Exactly. Are you going to get one? Did you know about this already?
I did know about it, but I hadn't been thinking about actually getting an address until just now, because you're like so excited about this.
I am. I'm pretty stoked about it. We should do a cool stuff found on it. Let's do that.
Okay.
I'll do that. That's after awesome. The show. I'll do. So before people actually hear this.
Time is wibbly wobbly.
Exactly. I will have done a cool stuff found.
Awesome.
Right. So from Starfleet to, I don't know, what do you want to, hit Microsoft next?
Sure. Let's hit Microsoft next.
All right. we've made careers of that.
I love capitalism. Anyhow, so Microsoft announced a day or so ago that they are, as part of their Windows 10 initiative, they are going to offer much tighter integration with other devices outside of the Windows platform.
Right.
Yeah. And so what that means for iPhone users is that Microsoft wants to make sure that if you have an iPhone, that you can use it as seamlessly and as transparently as possible with your Windows 10 computer as you do on your Mac. So,
or your iPhone.
No, use your iPhone with your Mac or your Windows computer.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Did I put the words in the wrong order?
No, again? You actually got it right. I listened to them in the wrong order.
Wibbly wobbly. I understand. Mm-hmm. It can happen. Anyhow, so what Microsoft is doing is taking their core applications and services and making sure that they have very robust iOS apps so that you can do things like, well, actually what they want you to do is use their apps in lieu of the apps that Apple offers you. So like for your photos, you would use OneDrive. And your photos will automatically synchronize through OneDrive instead of iCloud and things like that. But the thing that really caught my eye when they started talking about this was that they said Cortana on the iPhone. And Cortana is Microsoft's version of Siri, essentially. And everyone I know that has used Cortana prefers it over Siri because it allows them to do so much more. And it is, in their opinion, much more responsive.
Have you heard the? I know you don't watch a lot of broadcast TV or even cable TV. Have you heard the commercial where someone is interacting with Cortana and making like reminders, setting up reminders and stuff?
No, I haven't. But I can imagine what it's like based on what people have told me. And it's a lot closer to the knowledge navigator that I've always wanted than Siri.
Fair enough. That actually wasn't my point, though. My point was that in that commercial, everything comes off as really awkward and weird.
Oh, all right.
It's the way Cortana repeats stuff back. So like the, and I'm going from memory here, and because again we are such top men,
top.
Man, I didn't go and watch this and actually, you know, like make sure I had all the quotes right. But I think the guy says something like, you know, remind me to get flowers for my wife. Or when I get to the store, remind me. I think it was the point of it was that Cortana was smart enough to tie a reminder to a location, and this is without any kind of, you know, NFC geofencing.
Right. So Cortana knows when you get to the store where the flowers are to remind you to get the flowers.
Right. But the way, which is cool. That's great. That's good stuff. That's actually useful stuff too.
Yes.
But the way Cortana would repeat it back came off as really, really weird. It was like, okay, remind you to get flowers, or no, it was okay, remind you when you get to the store. And I'm not saying this is, I'm not trying to be critical here. It's every time I saw that commercial, there was that response, and there was something like, make me tell something about my wife. It is the way the Cortana would repeat the stuff back was all very, very unnatural.
Huh. Okay. That's interesting. And something that if they expect people to use all the time, they should address. Because if it doesn't feel natural, people are less likely to use it.
Yeah. Although I would imagine I'm probably a little bit more sensitive to this stuff than a lot of folks. Like I said, I wasn't actually being critical. It just stuck out of my head.
All right. Well, I need to play with this. So I'm actually looking forward to when Microsoft releases all this new stuff so that I can put it to the test on my iPhone. Because I am really curious to see just how well Cortana works on the iPhone. In part because Siri has a leg up in one sense, because Siri has system level integration. Cortana, just like Google Now, does not.
Right.
So, yes, you have to intentionally invoke the feature as opposed to just doing your thing and Siri hears it and
right, and that's something that Microsoft is going to find Apple's control over the iPhone ecosystem will make Microsoft services, no matter how good they are, less convenient for users to switch. You can't sub out Siri for Cortana, for instance.
Right, and Google fans are already experiencing that on the iPhone because Google Now, same thing. You can't replace it as the default for Apple's own apps.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, right. You can't make Google Now can't take over your home screen, which is something that you can do with an Android device. And Google Now is a lot more useful on Android than it is on iOS. And that's completely disregarding at least all of the political choices you're making.
Sure.
To make philosophical choices you're making to get in bed with Google Now. But you know, if you do make those choices and you're involved with Google Now, it's a great service, but it's better on Android. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff that Microsoft can do and by bringing the service to iOS, but there's a lot of stuff it can't. And I don't think that Microsoft is going to supplant Siri in any way, even if it is markedly better, just because there's some things that it can't do. But hopefully it will push Apple to advance Siri faster.
Yes, that's what I'm hoping for. I like the idea of serious competition in this space, because making Siri better so that it can compete with Cortana and Google Now means that we win no matter which platform we choose to go with. They all have to improve to stay competitive.
Yes. Yes, it's true. But I have one more aspect of this that I thought would be interesting to talk about. Microsoft, and we touched on this a little bit in an episode of TDO. Was that yesterday? What's today, Wednesday?
Today is Wednesday, so Tuesday. Yes.
Yeah, yesterday. Must have been yesterday. And that is that, you know, Microsoft is now really throwing its weight behind being platform agnostic for its services.
Which I think is really smart.
Well, it is smart because they've lost the mobile wars at this point. It's Android and it's iOS. Windows Phone is, if it wasn't Microsoft, you know, they wouldn't even be a would-be player.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, you know, the Windows Phone would be little more than Tizen at this point, if it wasn't for the fact that it's Microsoft. And Microsoft can afford to continue to promote it and develop it and try to make it relevant, but you know, they've lost those wars. And so having the company's services, including Office, including Skype, including Cortana, you know, eventually they should leverage Xbox. I've always been a big proponent for Microsoft to better leverage Xbox when it comes to its mobile devices.
Yes.
I'm sure there's some more services out there somewhere that are Microsoft services. Outlook would be obviously a big one. Exchange, you know, doing those things, all of the various productivity stuff that Microsoft does. My question for you, though, is fine. So Microsoft has decided to do this, to put its services everywhere, to be platform agnostic, even while they continue to make their own platforms. And that's all well and good. And as a matter of fact, it's probably the only thing that Microsoft could realistically do after Steve Ballmer botched the Windows on mobile experience so badly.
And that's actually very generous, what you're saying.
It is extremely generous because I am in a generous mood today. The question is, do they have enough taste and talent to do so?
That's a really good question. And we'll have to see. Okay, on the talent side, I'm going to say yes, because Microsoft has some incredible engineers. I mean, they're doing some amazing things. It's just the whole committee thing ruins a lot of what they do before it gets to market.
Yeah, and as Steve Jobs always said, Microsoft doesn't have any taste. And that was certainly true under Steve Ballmer, and it was certainly true under Bill Gates. It may or may not be true under Satya Nadella. We don't really know yet, although, quite frankly, He's doing a really good job.
Oh yeah, it's very clear this is no longer Steve Ballmer's Microsoft. This is now Satya Nadella's Microsoft. And I'm liking a lot of what I'm seeing come out of Microsoft now, especially this whole embrace all the other platforms as opposed to crush all the other platforms.
Yes. So I wonder if they have the taste to be able to make these services compelling enough for people to actually want to use, and I don't think we have that answer yet. It's going to take time to see what Microsoft does.
Yeah, I agree. Although I have hope, which I know sounds really crazy coming from me.
Well, you know, it's easy to hope that Microsoft can do well because they've lost. I mean, you know, Windows is a shrinking platform. Desktop computing, while it will remain profitable for many years to come, is not where the innovation is taking place. It's all on mobile. Microsoft is, like I said, utterly lost the mobile wars. So, you know, it's at this point now we can start rooting for them because they're not the 800 pound gorilla anymore. Apple's the 800 pound gorilla.
That's true. Oh, how the tables have changed.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's a, we can root for them to do something well enough to give Apple competition, because at this point, anything that Microsoft does to compete with Apple is going to actually have to survive on its merits rather than surviving on Microsoft's ability to leverage its Windows and Office hegemonies into new markets.
And I think this is something Satya Nadella understands that Steve Ballmer didn't want to hear. And that's big, because that means that Microsoft is now under leadership that will embrace this and run with it.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know, we'll see. It's going to be interesting. Hopefully in a good way.
Yes, hopefully in a good way.
Hopefully in a good way. All right, we have one more topic. Now we've spent a lot of time in the last month now. Right? Month and a day. When did they ship? The 20th?
26th is when they were showing up in people's, well, okay, so it's at people's hands.
There you go. A month and a day. And at this point, I think we can talk about something new, and that's, what do we want to see different on Apple Watch? You know, now that we've spent some time with these things on our wrist.
Yep. Okay. The first thing that I want to see is intelligent controls, meaning I said it tongue in cheek before the Apple Watch actually came out. I want to be able to walk into a theater and have my Apple Watch go into a special type of do not disturb mode where it doesn't remind me an hour into the movie to get up and walk.
And you want that, though. You want that without you having to say, "Yo, I'm in a theater."
Right. Right. Now, so I'd like...
There's a lot of data there, man.
There's a lot of data there, yes.
And there's a lot of data that Apple doesn't necessarily have control over.
Well, they do have the ability to use location services to know that I'm in a theater.
Yeah, but man, that's so granular. Are you kidding me? You want Apple to be able to sift through all of its maps data and identify when you're in a theater.
Sure. They do this already. They have the whole geofencing thing that we've had on the iPhone for a while. It's no different from that. The difference is, instead of giving me a reminder, you are changing a setting for me.
Wait a minute. My iPhone knows when I'm in a theater now?
It can. It knows when you're at Starbucks. It knows when you're at the Apple Store. You can tell it, when I'm at the grocery store, remind me, or, you know, bring up this reminder about getting apples. You just learned something new.
I did. Well, that's one of the things I was just saying that Cortana could do that the iPhone couldn't.
Well, I think Cortana does it in a more robust way. It's much more simplistic, from what I understand, on iOS.
All right, so I'm going to do some testing on that. All right, if that's already in the works, then I guess, yeah, it's actually it should be on the Apple Watch too.
Yes, and the other thing that I'd love to see right now. Oh, it's funny. My Apple Watch just told me I have to stand up, and I'm not. This is something that just came up for me today. I would love to be able to set my Apple Watch so that if my resting heart rate goes above a certain level, that I get an alert.
And you had this because you actually had you had an allergic reaction to something.
I did. I did. Yes. And sometimes when I have an allergic reaction, it affects my ability to think clearly, and I'm not aware that I'm experiencing some level of anaphylactic shock. So that's what happened because I can't have any dairy, and managed to accidentally get some in me. Had I been coherent enough, I would have checked my heart rate to help figure out what was going on, but instead, I didn't. And when I finally did check my heart rate, when someone told me, you need to do this, my resting heart rate was 104 beats per minute. And it would have been really great, because this is my little health tracking device, if I could have set an alarm so that, or an alert, so that if my resting heart rate went up above, say like 90, so that I have a big threshold there.
Right.
Then I get an alert that tells me, hey, your heart rate's too high.
Right. And this is not something that would be good to have as a default feature. This would be a good optional feature for those people who need to actually watch things like their heart rate.
Yes. No, I agree. Yeah. This is something I would enable and then intentionally set a specific heart rate to watch for. Yeah.
And there's folks who actually need to watch for their resting heart rate to go too low too.
Yes.
Plenty of medical conditions along those lines. Yeah, that would be nifty. I would imagine that at the very least, I would imagine that at WWDC, which is just in, 2 weeks?
Right.
Less than 2 weeks. That Apple will probably announce that developers are going to get access to Apple Watch sensors, which they don't have right now.
I hope so. I hope they get that access, and I hope that that there's a developer out there that's listening, and it's like, oh wow, yeah, that's actually something that more than Jeff needs, and they start working on apps. Please do that, people.
Well, so my thought was that it could quite likely come from a third party developer before it'll come from Apple, and then Apple will eventually incorporate it and. Make it automatic.
Sure.
And all right, so that would be a good thing. I think there's probably all kinds of sensor related things that will be huge improvements to Apple Watch that'll turn into huge improvements to Apple Watch.
I agree. And that has me really excited about the future of Apple Watch. I mean, right now, I think it's a very cool device, and I have had a thing where I'm not wearing it all the time at home, but after this little incident, I think I need to start doing that, just so that I can, if I need to, do a quick heart rate check.
Sure, that makes sense.
But if developers are coming out with more software that lets me do whatever I need to with that sensor data, in my case, that alarms, then, man, that would be huge. I'm really excited about the potential for that. So hopefully Apple does give developers access to the sensors. They did tell us developers are going to be able to start rolling out Apple Watch native apps this fall. So I could see having a very simple app that just monitors a specific sensor and gives an alarm for thing.
What do we have now?
We have companion tools or companion
good
apps.
Good point.
Yeah. Okay, so not Apple Watch native, they're iPhone companion right now.
I want, now Dave has laughed at me every time I said this, but I want developers to be able to bring us watch faces. I actually like most of the faces that come with Apple Watch. You know, it's funny. The one I like the most is the default one. It's the one that has everything in just text, and it's got the time by default. It's got the time, calendar, weather, activity monitor. And I think the moon phase or something, but it's all text.
Okay. Yes.
I like the information on that one a lot, but a big part of me wants, I want an analog face on my watch. So I ended up going, despite the fact that I don't like it as much, I'm going with one of the simpler watch faces right now. But I'm thinking that developers will be able to do some really interesting things with watch faces once they're allowed to do so by Apple. And I would like those to come.
I think that would be awesome. I have found that there are certain things that I really wish I could do with watch faces. Well, the big thing is I customized the utility face to show me just what I want, but I have that big empty space on the right side of the face where you would have the date. I want to put my daily step count right there.
Right. Right. You can customize a lot with several of the faces, but you can't actually customize everything.
Which I'm finding to be very frustrating.
Yeah, I would like that to change. And I would also like to see some famous watch faces from actual watches come to the
Apple Watch. Oh, that would be fun too.
Preferably not stolen by folks, actually.
Legit watch faces, not people just ripping them off.
Yeah, that's, I would kind of like to say. I think there's a lot more that can be done with the watch face on the Apple Watch than Apple has yet to do with it, and including like new ways of telling time. You know, there are some really interesting, crazy, ridiculous, expensive, you know, experimental watch, like the kind of watches that the company, you know, there's maybe $600,000 watches or $200,000 watches, and they're going to make 10 of them, right? And there's some really interesting things that have been done with mechanical timepieces that tell time in interesting ways. And I really think that we can do new and interesting ways of telling time with these things that we're putting on our wrist of all sorts. And I can't wait for that, you know, massive creative pool to be unleashed on this particular area.
Yeah, I agree. I think that if developers are given the ability and the flexibility to come up with their own unique designs, we're going to see some really cool stuff. I mean, you see some of that on Pebble already, but imagine what you could do with that kind of flexibility on Apple Watch.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I can't wait to, especially, you know, like there's some animated things that could be done. There's just, I feel like there is a different, there are new ways to tell time that could be expressed on a display that is this good.
Yes, I agree. And we know animation is totally possible. Have you played with a Mickey Mouse watch face yet?
Yeah, a little bit.
Did you notice Mickey's foot?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's tapping out the seconds.
Right.
So, and it looks great the way it works. So sure, you can do animation. Well, okay, the second hand sweeping around on an analog watch, that's animation. So sure.
Yeah.
I would love to see some of the animated things, useful animated things that people could do.
Yeah, okay, now you see my watch, you know how it's partially skeletonized, the face? So you can, you know, part of the face is missing and you can actually see the watch works behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see a skeletonized watch face where you've got all the pieces that are moving in time.
That would be awesome.
That would be exciting. I don't know how useful it would be, but I'd like to see it.
It doesn't matter because part of the experience of owning a watch, and this is coming from the guy that hasn't worn a watch for like 20 years, is the way you personalize it, because it is a very personal device. So there will be things that you want to do with it that merely reflect who you are, as opposed to give you a useful piece of information, like what time of day is it?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot. And doing that well would be surprisingly difficult for what that's worth, doing a skeletonized animated face. A lot of skeletonized watches are very difficult to read because you don't have a plain face for the hands.
Oh, sure.
So you know, you've got all this busy clockwork going on.
That makes sense.
By the way, I don't know whose app it was. I don't know if it was the weather app or Apple's app that got updated after the 101 Apple Watch update.
Mm-hmm.
And that was displaying the weather forecast on a watch face.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
Right? So each hour had the watch face there, and then on the end of this, you don't see this. Must have been the Yahoo's weather app, which I actually think is a very nifty app. And I'm not, so why am I not seeing it now?
That's a good question.
Right now, okay, I just launched the glance. So this is under glances, and I thought that was a really, really clever way of displaying the weather forecast in a concise format. You've got a watch face, and then at each hour, you've got a little icon for what the heck the forecast is supposed to be, including temperatures.
That's actually awesome.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty clever.
That is clever. Yeah, that's really cool.
And yet now, that particular glance is actually working really, really poorly for me at the moment. So that's good.
Well, you know, we're actually doing a show right now, so it's not like it's something that can work well when we need it to. That's how shows go.
This is how shows go. All right. So, anything else you want to see from the Apple Watch?
Those are the big ones right now. Oh, step counting. I mean, stair step counting.
Yeah, but that's
a software update. That's all it needs.
If that's all it needs, why is it already there?
I agree. Why is it not there?
Well, Occam's Razor says that it may be more than just a software update. There may be there's probably an accuracy problem with the sensors that it has, and that's why Apple didn't do it.
But it's something they should be able to handle from a software standpoint.
It depends on whether or not they can get the data from the sensors, though. If the problem is the data that they're getting from the sensors and is causing an accuracy problem, then it's going to require different sensors to solve that. That means Apple Watch 2.
Yes, although I have a hard time believing that it's an issue where the sensors can't give accurate data, because you remember the Fitbit 1?
Yeah.
A long time ago? Yeah,
that's a great point.
It did very accurate flights of stairs counting. No barometer built in. And I've seen many other devices that go on your wrist that can track stair steps without any problem at all. I have a very hard time believing that Apple chose sensors for their device that can accurately collect all this other data, but can't tell if you've gone up a flight of stairs. They're already doing it on the iPhone.
Well, that's true, but the iPhone has a lot more room with other sensors. I mean, that's actually making my point.
Yes, but look how small the Fitbit 1 was.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right, but I think my original point stands. It doesn't seem like Apple would choose sensors that didn't do this, but if that's the problem, it will not be a software update.
That's true. Yeah, if it's not... Yeah, you're right. That would require Apple Watch 2.
I would certainly like it, by the way. Oh, my goodness. We are in an hour and 4 minutes.
Time flies.
It does. Even when we're doing the show.
or despite.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, then I guess we can talk about sensors more later.
Yeah.
All right, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Yes, thank you for listening. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. It's like I have no idea that that, you know, it's coming up on a time when I'm supposed to say something. The Bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And stay subscribed. We'll in see- spite of us.
Please. We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.